likes coffee out there? Who likes to start their morning with a coffee and have it by the K-cup, the one cup at a time? What a great idea. People don't drink a pot of coffee at a time. They drink it a cup at a time. And the wonderful development of the K-cup is something that has made drinking coffee even more pleasurable. We're here tonight with a very special guest who is one of the developers and founders of the single-serve coffee, better known as Keurig. Chris Stevens, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to be here.
I'm so happy you came in all the way from Indiana, and I appreciate that. You're doing so many great things. We're going to talk about some of the things you're doing. You teach now at Notre Dame, is that right?
I do.
So you had this great career in business, and you still have a career in business. You're still investing and helping businesses develop, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But you're kind of devoting a lot of your time to helping kids get into the business world and teaching them what you know.
Yeah, somebody once said you should have two careers in life, one to the age 60 and one from 60 on, and I took it literally. So Keurig was a great ride. They were four of us with a dream of changing the coffee world one cup at a time 24 years ago, and we launched it 22 years ago, and it's been quite a ride.
Now, when you got involved and you heard this idea, was this an idea that you said, oh my gosh, this is a great idea, or did you kind of think, okay, there's problems with it? What was your initial gut reaction?
Well, as I've learned, I think the key to being an entrepreneur is you either have to fill a need or create a want. We don't need 350 lattes at Starbucks. Well, maybe some of us do. but you know, people, they created an environment that people want to be a part of, and they're willing to pay a premium for that. But in the coffee industry, there had been no innovation since Joe DiMaggio and Mr.
Right.
Coffee back in the 60s.
Right.
And we asked a fundamental question, why do we brew coffee a pot at a time when we drink it a cup at a time? So at a pot at a time, you have to drink whatever's there. It's been sitting there. It starts to cook and get nasty. So we thought if we did it one cup at a time, variety, freshness, convenience, no waste, no cleanup, and no hassle. I've only done that a couple of times.
I mean, it's like a kind of a no-brainer. You know, you kind of hit yourself in the head and you go, why didn't someone do this a long time ago? So when you got involved in this, what was the challenge? Was this a challenge to get out there as quickly as you can to get out in front of other competitors? Or what were the challenges that you faced with this great idea that you
had? There were other single cup systems out there that made coffee out of a large hopper. You'd pour 2 pounds of coffee in, and what you would get would be freshly brewed stale coffee. You could get it a cup at a time, but it would enable to create a package that you could flush with nitrogen that would last up to 6 months, where you could literally brew a pot of coffee one cup at a time, was really an engineering challenge. So we had to design the brewer that would make this. We had to design the package that would be able to stand up to 195 degree temperatures of water going through it. And we had to design a packaging line to make the K-cups. And all along, we continue to try to work on developing an environmentally friendly K-cup. And Keurig Green Mountain is on record as saying that by 2020, they will have a fully recyclable K-cup.
I'm kind of surprised they don't already have one, because I do hear people say it's wasteful to throw those things away. They're not recyclable. Why is it taking so long?
It's just there's no material on the planet that we've been able to find. We looked at a corn-based product, but we do now have the K-cups in what's called polypropylene. So the initial K-cups were polyethylene, polystyrene, and those were not recyclable. Polypropylene is recyclable in 60% of landfills.
Ah, okay. And what does Keurig mean? Is there a meaning to that word? I'm just kind of curious.
Yeah, we thought about what an interesting name would be. Something would be memorable, like a Haagen-Dazs or something like that. So Keurig stems from the Dutch word meaning neat, clean, or excellent.
Ah.
But it means great coffee in any language.
And you speak Dutch.
I do. It's Canada, Nederlands, yes.
Like, and how in the world did you learn to speak Dutch?
Well, I was blessed to be able to go to Notre Dame and get an education and play basketball back in the early 60s. Sorry, 70s. I'm dating myself. And then I had a chance to go play professional basketball over in Belgium. And Belgium is basically a quadlingual country. French, Flemish, which is an offshoot of Dutch, German, and English. So it was really thrilling to be in such an environment where I could learn different languages.
We're here with Chris Stevens, who's one of the developers and founders of Keurig Coffee, and he's doing some amazing things that we're going to be talking about. If you have any questions for him, any questions about his business theories and kind of his outlook on life, he's a very interesting person. He's done a lot of different things. He's moving into his, fourth or fifth career, I can tell. Give us a call here, and we can get you on the phone. 312-981-7200, 981-7200. Now, you talk a little bit. You're back teaching at Notre Dame, and one of the things I read somewhere is you said you hope that maybe you can help some of the students avoid stupid things in their careers, or mistakes that are made. What kinds of mistakes have you made in your past that you say those were really stupid mistakes as opposed to mistakes that you learned from?
Well, I think in my early years, I was bounced around some foster homes, and it was a little bit of a challenge of stuff. So I didn't really have a role model for quite a while to be able to emulate. And so as I grew up, I did some dumb things. And I think when I got to Notre Dame, I was like Kevin McAllister in Home Alone. I made my family disappear. And I pretty much raged my way through my first year playing basketball and didn't do well academically. And I wasted some time there. So when I think back to that, I actually had a young lady come to me who said, "Hey, Professor, I want to put together a collection of letters of Notre Dame graduates who've gone on to do pretty well, that if you were to be able to go back in time and write a letter to your freshman self with advice on how to optimize your Notre Dame education, what would you say?" So I wrote a letter, and I had my top 10 tips for that, and they published in the book, and I give that to every student that I have the good fortune to be able to teach, just with some ideas that I wish I had known when I was there. That's just one. And then in business, you make sometimes decisions that are emotional decisions, impulsive decisions, and there's a decision-making process I try to teach our students to go through, because you've got to be your very, very best in the darkest moments.
It's interesting that you see a lot of I'm going to take a break now, and let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking some more to Chris Stevens about your teaching and some of your theories in business development. 312-981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We're here with Chris Stevens, who is one of the developers and founders of Keurig Coffee. Welcome back, Chris, thank you so much for coming. Now, this is sort of like a welcome back, Cotter. You're done with your career for now with Keurig, and you decided to go back and teach where you got your undergraduate degree. And what made you want to do that?
Well, I had done some guest lecturing in universities and done a bunch of things pro bono, and I just loved being in the classroom, and I kind of thought that this would be a way where I would be able to give back to young people. And being in this environment at Notre Dame is just truly special. I was fortunate enough to be able to build a townhouse a 10-minute walk from the football stadium, so my exercise is the campus, and I spend my time between teaching 327 lovely darlings on Mondays and Wednesdays meeting with students. And it's when you meet with students and when they have sometimes the greatest challenges, which is the most rewarding things that you can be able to help them with.
And tell us about, there's an initiative called the Inspired Leadership Initiative, which is very interesting. Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, I came back to Notre Dame to help young people find their passion and pursue what they love. Somebody once said that pursue what you love and the happiness will follow. And a couple of 3 years ago, I got tapped on the shoulder by the provost and by the president of the university that Harvard had started a program maybe 12 years ago, and then Stanford started their version about 7 years ago. If you're somebody like me who's finished an accomplished career, by accomplished I just mean whether it's law, medicine, business, education, military, and you're going to retire and you want to pivot and you got a lot of tread left in your shoes, there's no place to go to be in a stimulating academic environment with people of a similar mind and go back to school, not for the grades, but for the learning. So we started the Inspired Leadership Initiative. We have 15 amazing people. This is our second year, who are at Notre Dame for an entire academic year. If you check out ili.nd.edu, with the help of a faculty advisor, they kind of discern what they want to study. They can audit 2 to 4 courses across the entire university each semester, amazing weekly luncheons with guest speakers, weekly dinners for just the cohort. We brought them here to Chicago for an entire weekend, saw Hamilton, did a boat tour of the cultural tour, did 5 hours of service work at St. Anne's School. We'll take them to Rome. We'll take them to London. And they have a course that they take themselves on the Great Book. So it's actually now an opportunity for me not just to help students be able to find their way, but maybe to help people find a new passion that they want to pursue and be a greater force for good.
What a great experience. I mean, and you're right, the statistics show that people aren't ready to retire and just sit on a beach somewhere or go play golf every day. I mean, people still want to be stimulated, and it's sort of like a dream, because when you're in college, I don't know if you had the same thought, but you know, you wanted the good grades because you wanted to get ahead and you wanted to get done and you wanted to graduate and you wanted to make money and all those things, and learning kind of took a second back seat And now learning like the courses in the great books. I know they offer all these different courses that I would love to sit and take. You know?
Yeah, it's really very special. You asked me one of the questions about what are some of the maybe dumb things I would do differently or regret. But, you know, I think when you're young, I know when I was in my 20s, I wasn't much, but I was all I thought about. And, and you know, you push hard to try to get the big house, to get the big job, to get the big car. And I was on the road a lot, a real lot. And I missed a lot with my five kids who I adore. And as I think back to those times, I don't know how much things I would have done differently, but I think I would have spent a lot more time making sure that I was more present.
Yeah. Well, and I think and you're going to always have regrets, right? You know, and again, and I'm sure your children have forgiven you for not being there, knowing that you're a role model to them, too. I mean, you're also out there showing them what success is and how to do it, which is, again, another a parental trait that's obviously important.
Yeah, I teach in the Management Organization Department at Notre Dame, and I've had a chance to teach both one-year MBAs, executive MBAs, change management, and one-year MBAs, business problem solving. But for my undergraduates, I teach principles of management. And on the first day of every class, I tell them, okay, everybody who's here for principles of management, raise your hand. It's like, duh. And I said, you're in the wrong class. We're changing the name to principles of leadership. You lead people, you manage affairs. People don't need to be managed. They need to be inspired. They need to be led. They need to be provided with an environment where they can be the best that they can be. So my main goal in teaching this course is try to help our students become inspirational leaders. We've all had coaches and teachers who have had a negative influence on our life. We know who that felt. Maya Angelou once said, if you're going to remember what you said, if you're going to remember what you did, everyone will remember how you made them feel. And I want to make sure that they understand how important it is to be inspirational leaders.
Do students who are getting an MBA generally get a lot of training in that? Because it seems to me, just from the little I know about business, and I've litigated cases involving business organizations, a lot of people don't have any skills in this at all. And they haven't even thought about having skills. They think that by being smart or being hardworking, they somehow can get their group to do what they want them to do. And this can be learned.
Yeah, there's a lot of people knocking the millennials and the Gen Zs out there for not being attentive and stuff like that. So I think, you know, it's a real challenge to be able to help young people stay focused. High school kids are on electrical devices 11 hours a day.
Ugh. Unbelievable. Let's pick that up when we come back. I'm here with Chris Stevens, who is a professor of business at Mendoza College of Business at Notre Dame and one of the founders of the Keurig Coffee Cup. Thank you for joining me. This is the Karen Conti Show. We're here with Chris Stevens, who's one of the developers and founders of the Keurig Coffee Cup product. And he's also a professor now at Mendoza College of Business at Notre Dame. Chris, you were talking a little bit about how students are on their devices 11 hours a day. It's amazing.
Well, there's a study done by the Pew Research Center for 13 to 17-year-olds that on average, those kids are on their phones 9 hours a day. And then you add to that the headphones, the Bose, laptops, and entertainment, games, and that type of thing. And it really has become a distracted generation. How they're able to do what they do, I would never be able to do it back in those days. So I think one of the things that all of us need to do is to create an opportunity to quiet the voices, whether it's in the classroom, projects that they work on, that type of volunteer service work. Shirley Chisholm, who was the first African-American woman elected to Congress, said service is the rent you pay for occupying the planet. And when students have the opportunity to be able to go out and do things and turn off the phones and everything, it's amazing how giving they are.
How are the kids different from when you went to school? I mean, I feel like they're very different students. I feel like maybe the helicopter parenting has harmed them a little bit in that they don't know what it is to fail, and they're just a little bit different. You know, books have been written about the millennials and the Generation Zs or whatever they're called. What do you think about that? Are they really different?
We're not different. They are just, it's a different society. Mark Zuckerberg said the amount of data that's being created and exchanged among mankind is doubling every 12 to 18 months. We didn't have the internet. We had typewriter. We didn't have anywhere near the distractions. And the distractions for these young people today are terrible. Now, think about texting. 82% of students who are or young people that are teenagers said that they've texted and drove. The number of deaths, 390,000 people were injured last year because of texting accidents. 4,600 were killed versus 3,100 the prior year. year. So the whole need to be able to respond immediately to things, that pressure is really, really tough on students. And I think parents need to understand that, and teachers need to understand that, and create an environment that's much safer for the kids.
If you were to give some really concrete advice to parents about these types of things, what kind of rules would you make, or what would you try to do? I say, you said quiet the voices. What do you mean by that? Just put the phone down for 2-3 hours?
Or? Well, create opportunities of real engagement, doing things together. And somebody once said that, you know, Father Hesburgh had a great line once. He said, the greatest gift you can give your children is not your time, it's to love their mother, but to be able to do things together as best you can. And we don't all have, you know, double parent families and stuff, but being able to have a loving relationship with the young people where you expose them to things. Sometimes people find their passion, sometimes their passion finds them. You just got to put them in enough places and give them enough opportunities to be able to find their passion. And when they do that, they know that you care. Lou Holtz had 3 rules for his football game. He said, do the right thing, be the best you can be, don't compare yourself to anybody, and show people that you care. Show people that you care. And so, I mean, being able to let young people know that you really are genuinely interested in their goodness, and if they've got a talent, encourage them. It may not be the road in most travel, but it may be something that's very, very special for them.
And so, you know, you're still, you know, you're teaching, but you're still doing some business work, right? What is your next goal when it comes to business?
Well, I invest in businesses that have dreams. I give a gift to all of my students on the first day class. It's called Five. The book is called Five by a gentleman named Dan Zadra, Z-A-D-R-A.
Oh, is that the book you gave me?
It is.
Ah,
and I find out as much as I can about my students in advance. I write a personal note in it, and I gift wrap it for them. And over 4,000 books later, the author loves me. But my point is that I try to help them understand, Five, where do you want to be in 5 years? Student athletes think that they're going to be able to play forever. What's your backup plan if that knee goes out? Concussion syndrome. So I think helping prepare students and young people for vision and dreams and where they want to be, and giving them then the environment and the power to be able to pursue what they really love. Pursue what you love and the happiness will follow.
Do you think that the students that you teach are different as far as, do they want to kind of be their own bosses? Is that more prevalent than, say, when we were in college, we wanted to work for a company? That's kind of what we thought about.
I think it varies. We have the reason the society works is because we're all different. We've got engineers, we've got scientists, we've got lawyers, we've got doctors, we've got business people, we've got nonprofit people. I think the key thing is that for people to be able to seriously take courses and internships and opportunities to either prove one of two things, what I don't want to do, or, wow, I really think I want to do this. So I just think you have to provide an environment where they can explore. And if they explore, they will find what they want.
Do you have any success stories that you can relay about students who maybe were a little bit adrift or kind of found their way and did some really neat things who were, you know, your students?
Well, I can say that I've had a chance over, this is my 8th year of teaching now, to see many students who I first met as freshmen, sophomores, and juniors that were very, very, you know, quiet and introverted, but have been able to still go on and do great things. One of the things I show them is a video by Susan Cain, who's an attorney, and she talks about the power of introverts, that 1/3 of the population would identify themselves as introverts, but yet it's the extroverts who take all the noise and everything. So being able to appreciate that, some of our great leaders were introverts, and they had to go to quiet places, and it's how you react to stimulus, but being able to let people know you're exactly fine just as you are. And so to be able to see, I think, different people, though, that kind of struggle getting out of their comfort zone, to be able to come back and do a presentation in our class is kind of fun. I have a young man who was a walk-on football player who will be in our class on December the 9th, a week from Monday. He's with a new consulting company here, and he's going to talk about the real world of the life of consulting and how he didn't think he was going to do it, and he's there now.
You know, you helped develop the Keurig coffee maker and the K-Cup coffee. You know, it changed the world. I mean, does it still freak you out sometimes where you travel somewhere around the world and you see someone using a Keurig cup?
It does.
I think of like Paul McCartney going to like, you know, Budapest and hearing his songs in Hungarian.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of the work that we did. I mean, the four of us actually end up really being 3 of us, Nick, Dick, and I guess I'm Stick or Stump now. But we just kind of worked on it. So I when I go into hotels or I go into the lobby of a law firm or something like that, and I get a little smile to my face, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and so you have all the success. You know, not everybody has all the success. You have this great success. You're doing something completely different. But when you look back, is there, you know, so many people have the goal of being famous these days or are rich or whatever it is. What about your success kind of surprises you as far as, well, negative and positive?
Well, I think, first of all, we're all going to fail at different things. And, you know, when you fall, it's not how far you fall that counts. It's how high you bounce back. And we've all had, your listeners out there, we've all had setbacks. Everybody's got a scrapbook. And I think part of life is being able to kind of push through those things. We had challenges in developing Keurig. We almost shut it down two or three different times. But I think that the three partners, we had very, very different skill sets. And I'll give you this hint and a piece of advice as it relates to partnerships. If two partners always agree in business, one of them is unnecessary. So you want to partner with people that have got different skills and complementary interests.
This is the most important question is, do you drink coffee?
Oh, yeah.
And what's your favorite way to drink it?
Well, it's kind of funny. I'm weird. If I am drinking on the go, I want to drink it out of a coffee cup.
Okay.
If I'm out, and I'll have sometimes milk and Equal in it. If I'm drinking it at dinner and it's a ceramic cup, I will drink it black only. So coffee kind of is kind of a different thing for me, but I kind of like a darker roast. But what's nice about Keurig, you can have whatever you want. I call it different beans for different genes.
And I see you also put little vitamin packs in yours. I've seen you do that on some video.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of different products. You know, coffee itself has no real nutritional value, but there's a thing called VitaPerk where you can pour it right in and get 15 essential vitamins and minerals.
Sounds like a good deal. Thank you so much for coming. Chris, will you come back and talk some more about what you're doing?
I'm here all night. Oh, no, of course I will.
I would love to have you back. Chris Stevens, if people want to reach you, quick email address.
C-S-T-E-V-E-N. The number 6 at nd.edu.
Thank you so much for joining me.